Welcome to Business from the Heart. My name is Katja Rossel. Today, I had the opportunity to chat with Andy. She shares her experience with us, how she started her international jewelry business 26 years ago. She loves her business partners and clients in the amazing island of Bali.
Hello, Andy. This is Katja. Hi.
Hi. It's wonderful to speak with you.
Yes, likewise. I'm so excited. You are in Austin. I'm in Berlin. This is just great.
Yeah. International Women Unite. Yes.
Yes. And then it's lovely. We met through Teresa, and she runs the Centenia Vera Hub in Dripping Springs, and you know her, and she introduced us. So she's also had this very much curiosity about internationally doing business, and she told me you run in business internationally.
Yes, I import jewelry from Bali in Southeast Asia and sell in the US. And I've been doing it 26 years now, going to Bali at least two times a year until the pandemic. So, which is a very strange thing, actually, for me. The entire pattern of my life is different now, temporarily, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, I imagine. So for all those years, you have been traveling there at least twice per year. That's amazing.
Yes. And I can't use any other word but family there. Technically, genetically, we're not family, but my agent's family and I have adopted each other in every way except official. And I feel at home in Bali. And so actually, it's been a great challenge during the pandemic because I'm used to seeing them every 5 to 6 months.
Oh, wow. Yes, I can imagine.
And,
wow.
And you know, we have WhatsApp, but it's not the same. And with the time difference being what it is, it's exactly 12 or 13 hour difference, depending on the time of year. It's been hard not to see my agent's mother is a second mother to me. And so it's actually, I miss them.
Oh yes. Oh wow. And it's when you have two homes, so realize so far until you just share that. Because this is for me, it's kind of like it's more than your lifestyle and your business are really very deeply connected, right?
Yes. It's inexplicable to me how a kid from Brooklyn, New York would be so at home in Bali, but there it is. It was very clear from the very moment I got to Bali that I was rooted there. And and then meeting Suparta is my agent's name and his family. I mean, we always just connected. It's just, they feel it too. They feel it too. So I've been really blessed in that way. So, so my business is more than just a business, to me. It's a huge part of my life, emotionally, not just financially. That's a small part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, then you're a perfect fit for this podcast, which is called Business from the Heart.
And I didn't say all that just because that's the name of the podcast.
and you told me before that you're really a globetrotter and you love traveling and visiting remote places. And yeah. So how did this come along that you started to travel to Bali so many years ago?
Well, I can't really explain globetrotting or wanderlust. You kind of either have it or you in you or you don't. But and I didn't grow up traveling. In fact, my father was afraid to fly. So I grew up driving all, you know, on car trips and you can go far in the US. But somehow I studied in Spain when I was in university and went abroad. And it just clicked for me that I just, a grand passion is travel. It just excites all of my senses. And I love it in my core. And so I have always done it. Sometimes alone, which wasn't necessarily my choice, but if I had the time, you know, and the money, I would go. Or in the US, we don't have that much vacation time, as, other countries in the world, and particularly in Europe. So I would generally accept a new position, but say, okay, but I'm going to start in a month. Or, you know, and then take off and go somewhere.
Well, that's clever planning there.
Yes. So I have always loved international travel. And I had no particular plan to wind up importing. My background is completely different. I'm a public policy person, a bureaucrat. I worked for the government in various capacities for, you know, several years. And then I was on a long, trip. And of course, I had heard of Bali. And so I went to Bali and I just felt a clunk inside of being, I can't really explain it, just home. Wow, centered.
That's amazing.
It was just a done deal. And I was supposed to go on to other islands in Indonesia, but I just could not stand the thought of leaving. And I'm not, I, at that time, as I said, I was a policy person. My background, my name is Andy. My nickname was Analytical Andy.
okay.
You know, I was not very, you know, I moved with my head more, you know, and, but I just, this was inside of me, just sort of spiritual or emotional, whatever you want to call it, neon signs inside of me just saying, do not leave, do not leave, do not leave, when I was in Bali. And it really was a grand surprise because again, I was Analytical Andy and this made no sense.
Oh, I bet. Yes.
But so I stayed longer than I planned in Bali. I delayed my trip home. But fortunately, my dearest friend was getting married. So I in the States. So I ultimately got on a plane and came back. But before I did, somebody in Bali suggested, not a Balinese, I shouldn't say, a Canadian woman who I met in Singapore, and then we met again by coincidence in Bali and became good friends. She said that I should try importing to the States, and I said, "What? Ah. I'm a policy wonk," and you know, and she just said, "Try it." And I thought, well, I couldn't really lose money. If nothing else, I could buy some jewelry and bring it back because you could put it in your backpack. And, you know, and if I couldn't figure out how to sell it, I could always sell it at cost. In other words, I couldn't really lose the money.
Yes.
And so I
that's
jewelry. And it was still in my backpack thinking, well, I don't know, this is crazy, but we'll see. You know, and I went to my friend's wedding, and which was in another city in the U.S. And it was, so I was in a hotel room, and the wedding was on a Sunday, and but a lot of people gathered, and it was raining, unfortunately, that weekend. So people were stuck in the hotel on Saturday. So another mutual friend said, "What's this? Open my backpack. What's this?" And jewelry was displayed all over the hotel room on across the bed, and everybody went nuts. And a business was born. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of like, doesn't sound so much as a business plan to me.
No, and it's really, it's almost embarrassing because I am analytical, or I was analytical Andy. And this was the backwards way to do things. It was certainly no plan. In fact, I planned to come back and work in the health department.
Mm-hmm.
But I, a business, you know, and I was mortified, by the way, that how could I be selling jewelry at my best friend's wedding? That was just...
Yeah, it's kind of like
not cool.
Not to do, not something to
right.
do.
Right. But the only thing that she said was she was busy that whole Saturday and didn't participate. The only thing she said, my friend Christine said, was, well, how come I didn't get to see the jewelry?
Because
it was all sold. It just kind of happened. I mean, really, mm-hmm. it wasn't a planned thing. But I thought, cool. Well, this is a way for me to be able to go back to Bali. And even after the wedding, I went for job interviews with former colleagues, and mm-hmm. My stomach was clenched. I did not feel good inside during the meetings, during the interviews. Mm-hmm. And I said, this does not make any sense. But one thing I learned from globetrotting is you have to mm-hmm. trust your instincts because you can't. You're standing in front of a sign that you can't read in your language, and the cultural cues are different. Everything is different. You have to rely on your instinct. So traveling globally was actually very healthy for me because analytical Andy had to get out of her head and use all of our other senses.
Wow.
and develop them. And particularly in Asia, because really culturally it's much more different than the US and Europe, for example. So mm-hmm. I exited the job interviews and said, you know what? I'm not fortunate, but I had the opportunity to explore this. I didn't have a spouse or kids mm-hmm. at that time, and I could try to grow a business. And if it didn't work, fine, but I wasn't risking anybody else's security. So that's how it got started, and that was in May, and mm-hmm. I got back to Bali May of 1995, and went back to Bali by October, and have been going back twice a year.
Ever since.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this sounds like really something even magical, right? You followed your instincts, and you were not thinking too much, but on the other hand, you gave it a try. It's just amazing.
Yes. Now, let me just also qualify that by saying, so I feel very much like it was magic, whatever you want to call it, serendipity. For me, it was spiritual neon sign. It was like a directive for me, you know, mm-hmm. but let me just say that was the entry point. The rest of it is work. And people, not you, Katya, but over the years, people somehow tend to glamorize it and say, oh, it must be so nice to import. Well, it is, but it's just like every other job. It's work, and you have setbacks, and you have to use your head. And I am fortunate in that I didn't have a background in jewelry by any means. I'm kind of a plain Jane kind of a person. But I have a business sense. I have an administrative sense. And so I've been able to, you know, use that. And it has pros and cons, just like everything else. For me, the pros outweigh the cons. And I get to go to Bali and see my people and feel the place that revives me so and centers me so.
Yeah. Well, this is really clever to turn really your passion and use it wisely to make money from it. That's just it's awesome and very inspiring enough to hear that.
It's enabled my lifestyle such that working for myself was a big change, obviously, from working from the government. And if you are a globetrotter, working for yourself works because then I could take off to travel. elsewhere besides Bali. If I had a regular paid employment in the US, you get typically 2 weeks a year, or maybe more if you're lucky. So the fact that I worked for myself all these years has enabled my passion to go everywhere, and also take care of my family in a way that I would not have been able to had I worked for someone else. So I remain in awe of how it happened, and I remain in huge gratitude for everything that it allowed me to do. And benefited, you know, some Balinese people.
So. Yes, because they create the jewelry, right?
Yes. I buy directly from the people who make the jewelry. To just complete this story, I haven't thought about it in many, many years, actually, but in telling it anew, I realized that, so I didn't understand how it was possible that, you know, it didn't make sense that, you know, my years of work, my graduate degree in public policy, my years of working for in healthcare policy, you know, mm-hmm. how could I wind up selling jewelry for a living? It seemed very frivolous to me. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But a few years into it, maybe 5 or 6 years into doing it, it suddenly made more sense. I don't drive in Bali. I had to hire a car and driver and I became good friends with a man named Gede, my driver. And mm-hmm. or a driver that I hired, he's not my driver. And I went to visit where he came from on the east side of Bali, which is on the other side of the mountain, and it's very dry, unlike what most people perceive of as Bali. And it's dry on that side of the island, and you can't grow rice there, and it's extremely poverty stricken. Extremely poor. It's not typically what tourists see. And
Never heard about it. I thought also it's very green, and you know, tourism is bringing in a lot of money.
Well, Bali is the most prosperous island within Indonesia, but still, it's third world level. And there are parts that I learned about that are extremely poor. And so I learned, he was showing me about the neighborhood in which he grew up. And I learned about some kids who were not going to school because it was too far to walk and it was too rocky without shoes.
Oh, boy.
So I said, you're telling me that if I buy shoes for $5, a child will go to school? And he said, yes. So I bought shoes for a few kids, and I came back and I told everyone I knew, literally. I mean, even I happened to have a doctor's appointment. I asked my doctor for $5. I asked everyone I knew, and everyone in my world could give me $5. And I wound up starting a little nonprofit. And
By the side, kind of, right?
I mean, yes. I mean, it just, in the beginning, it was just people donating money to me. There was no official nonprofit. There was no tax deduction. But these were people who knew me, and they knew that I was not going to run off to Mexico with the money, that I would really go back to Bali in a couple of months and do something with it. So I started. So Gede and I started buying milk and vitamins every month for ultimately about 75 kids in this village. And I would go to Bali and go visit, and every 5 to 6 months I would come back and then write up what we did with the money, and then send it and tell everybody. And I write the way I speak, very enthusiastically, I guess.
Yes, you are very enthusiastic.
So more money came. And so we did various projects over the years. I was always worried about how much money would come in, so I was afraid to do long-term commitments, but we bought pipe to bring water to this village, which was an expensive project. We fixed the roof on a on a school, which was a major deal because of rainy season. They used to lose hours because the kids would be rained on and have to leave school and stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my point in mentioning this is that you never know. And so then my life made, how my life took such a unique left turn, it made sense that my background in public policy suddenly to selling jewelry, well, it came around again that I was doing some public stuff in Bali. And, you know, and it was very, it was, you know, so I you just never know. That's the lesson mm-hmm. of my adult life. You never know.
Yeah, so true how it turns out and how kind of the puzzle pieces of your life somehow, you know, over the years, it all fits together.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing. So how I understand it now, you run an international jewelry business and you have this nonprofit.
The nonprofit is now not in operation because so it was going for about 10 years. And I had to let it go because of a variety of personal factors in my personal life with an elderly parent and child and husband life at home, but also because of some constraints after 9/11 in this country, in the US, rules for sending money overseas became a lot more stringent. And previously I was sending money directly to G'day, my friend who would buy the milk and vitamins and organize everything. And it was just informal in between us. But mm-hmm. after 9/11, I was prohibited from sending money overseas to that, like that.
Oh,
so
I see. Okay.
I had to, and I did work for a couple of years. So I sent it to another nonprofit mm-hmm. in Bali, an orphanage that agreed to basically receive the money from the States for me and then give it to G'day. So we were essentially still running it. But after a couple of years of that, the board of that orphanage felt uncomfortable, which I understand it because it could look bad, you know, that we were funneling money, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. It was all above board, but it wasn't comfortable for them to do that. So they informed me that I would have to find another way to get the money.
And nevertheless, you know, with buying the jewelry in Bali is kind of like you help people on the island make money, right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And people work, you know, in their homes and there's no child labor involved. Sometimes I've been asked that question. None whatsoever. The jewelry was, now the island has more money due to tourism, so more people can afford to go to school. But historically, a lot of people and the Balinese are excellent with their hands. They're very artistic, more so than just jewelry. It's been well documented. A higher proportion of people are artistic than average there. And so they do stone carvings and wood carvings and intricate paintings. And they make a lot of the clothing that we wear. And in addition to jewelry. And historically it's been a way for people to make money because you didn't need a formal education.
I see. And are you considering kind of importing also other goods from Bali, or is it the jewelry for you?
I dabbled with other things over the years, but stick to jewelry because there are fewer tariffs in my country for importing jewelry. Historically, there is not a strong silversmith union in the United States, so there are no taxes, or the taxes are low to import jewelry. However, if I tried to import clothing, it's more technically complicated to bring it into the United States because historically there were, you know, I don't, you know,
yeah.
Unions.
I mean, And that's interesting. You know, this probably you also had to consider after kind of the first months of, wow, this is exciting. People buy the jewelry you had in your backpack, right? And then you had to figure out all these issues with taxes and how to turn it into a, you know, actual business. And
Absolutely. And I learned it all on the job. I, you know, and they're importing, you know, there are a lot of rules and regulations. Particularly I know more so in Europe, more so than in the US. One of the interesting things is for me is that when I'm in Bali in my supplier's houses or stores, I'm looking at a variety of jewelry and choosing things. I'm usually next to buyers from all around the world. So I have, you know, sat next to, I put stuff in my basket and the person next to me is from Germany and putting stuff in their basket, you know, so that you meet buyers from all around the world. And it's interesting because their tastes are very different.
Really? That's interesting. Yeah.
Yes. And so I've chatted and so I know that the regulations are even more complicated for y'all than they are for me, but and so I would actually qualify anybody listening to this that whatever I say is applicable only, you know, for me in Texas, and you have to do your own research whether you're thinking about importing or working internationally, you know, wherever you are, you've got to research the rules in the country where you're, you know, you're importing from and in your home country.
Yes, for sure. And it's just, you know, what I like about your story and how you grew your business is that, you know, often people think, okay, I got to, you know, plan it all out to the, you know, in detail. But to see, I mean, like you said, you did this on the go and learning by doing, but also kind of doing a lot of research and finding your way and through the regulations.
Yes.
And we can't forget about them. But how you started is you had a gut feeling and an interest and you just started.
Yeah, I know. And one thing that I will say that is applicable for everyone, I think, is it is absolutely worth it. And I encourage people to pay for an agent or a translator wherever you're working internationally as a cross check. I mean, I've observed it with other people. You know, you can try to save money because you don't want to give a commission to someone, but it can lead to mistakes. Technically, you can get mistakes, you know, but also culturally, you can make mistakes and you don't even know it. And that can blow apart your relationship, or I shouldn't say blow apart, but alter a relationship for years to come. And so I mentioned my family there. Well, I fortunately met an American woman on a bus. And she said, I met her in Bali. And before I knew that I was going to start importing the jewelry, she said, I can see it all over you. You're not leaving this place here. And she gave me the name of Suparta, the man who became my agent. And I stuck it in my pocket and, you know, didn't think much about it. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I was pulling out this piece of paper that said, maybe I ought to go talk to him. And so he's the person that has become a dear family member to me. And he's been invaluable. And I, you know, there are mistakes that can easily happen just through miscommunication.
Yes, I bet. And then there are different, you know, cultural habits also, and you don't even know what to do, or you know, you don't think bad, but it doesn't get across well.
Right. I mean, also it's valuable in the case of, you know, in my case, I have an agent as a cross check on my suppliers. In other words, if I dealt directly with my suppliers, I can send an order or I can be there and make a plan. Okay, I want 20 size seven, that's US sizing, size seven rings, you know, or whatever. Or I actually observed this happening to somebody that they ordered, a, you know, whatever, 25 blue shirts to be made. Mm-hmm. Well, so then if you don't have an agent, then you think you're communicating well, and you are, but there are different levels of quality. And so the supplier can put in the box and ship to you, you know, 20 size seven rings, or but they arrive to me and they're not acceptable quality and they're already here. Whereas if I had paid for an agent, you know, he would have cross-check. And I mentioned the blue shirts because I do remember a friend who imported clothing, and again, that's a whole other realm for me, but I remember that, you know, she ordered a bunch of blue shirts and they all came with appropriately, except they all had green buttons. And again, you know, and you can understand why, because if you're in a third world country, it doesn't matter if your shirt, which is warm and it has and done correctly, it doesn't matter if it has green buttons if you are, you know,
just, you know, they're happy to have buttons or something.
Exactly.
Like that. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You know, but for the United States, that's not acceptable. And so how it, you know, they wouldn't know that, so you can understand how it happens. And that's why working with an agent who can crosswalk between the cultures and knows what level attention that I want for my business, and my business is known for quality, and there are things that that are close, but I won't accept it, you know. And so in working with the and actually I learned a lot from Suparta in checking things. So, you know, when you have handmade things, and that's the other thing, everything is handmade. So no two things are exactly alike. So you cannot assume, okay, I'll take a box of this and have them all be good. You have to check every single thing individually, whether it's jewelry, whether it's a painting, whether it's clothing, whatever it is, it has to be checked individually. So I would really urge everyone to pay the money, because it just prevents you from saving, you know, from making mistakes in, you know, culturally.
Yeah, and further costs, right? I mean,
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that I really would like to say to all listeners, if you're considering working internationally, this sounds really obvious, but it's actually not so obvious to do in practice, and that is, you have to respect the culture where you are. And again, it sounds obvious, but sometimes it's hard to do that.
Intellectually,
yes, it's fine. But emotionally, it's not always easy. And I think, again, in my experience and my observations watching people over the years from different cultures interact, because I'm in Bali, but again, we have buyers from all around the world, is that when there are language barriers, your other senses go up. So they can sense it if you're ticked off at them, even if you don't say anything. You you've got to respect that. If, for example, you know, in Asian cultures, it's a very different way of doing business. It's, you know, everything is much more indirect, and in general, in contrast, they're not as comfortable explaining and saying, "Well, look, I just can't do this," or "This doesn't work out." The no is harder to say, so you have to suss that out. And so, you know, or the differences, like I was saying, they send green buttons. In my case, I remember I ordered 25 size seven rings, which is the most popular size in my country. And when I got there, there were no size seven rings, and they were all other sizes. And
You would never imagine that something like that might happen, right? Because you ordered it differently,
right? But they don't see the big deal, because it's a ring is a ring. But for me, it's very hard, because if I present a tray of rings, everybody, my customers would say to me, "Well, do you have a size seven? Do you have a size seven?" And I have to say no. So I have to disappoint my customers. And also the other, for me to buy that, the other sizes, they don't sell as well. So I don't want to invest as much the same money, you know?
Yes.
And so I get fresh inside. In the early years, I would sort of have to deal with frustration and then fear. Oh, well, what if I buy this? I spend my money here and then I can't sell it because it's the wrong size and blah, blah, blah. But I had to really, if my energy would change while I was processing all that, and that's not comfortable in that culture, in my culture and probably in Germany and from my experience, you know, it would be okay to say, to have a discussion, respectful,
yeah,
a discussion that says, well, hey, I ordered size 7. We don't have any here. How quickly can you make them? What are we going to do? You know, let's figure this out or something. But it's not as comfortable in that culture for them to admit or, you know, I don't want to place blame, to discuss this type of thing. Uh-huh. So
very different.
So I have to learn, and I know that if your voice goes up, that's very uncomfortable for them. And, you know, so you have to respect the culture in which you are. You know, you've got to learn the language, and I at least some to a certain degree, you know, and you have to learn to do things in my culture. In America, we don't bargain. We don't haggle. I find that very exhausting. It's not efficient. That's being judgmental, but that's my culture. But when I'm in those cultures, I have to do it. And I have to be okay with it. So you have to adapt, also as an American, you have to learn the metric system, which is not hard, but you know,
it's learning. That's just what I thought. It's so much learning you have to do. It's amazing. Cause I mean, running a business by itself is already that people have to learn so much, right? There is so much, like not only or regulations, but also, how to set up an online shop and so on. These are things, we have to learn, or it's to learn. And then additionally, in your case, you have to learn all these cultural differences or even another language.
Right.
So,
well, when you say, that's the understatement to say you have to learn so much. When I thought about discussing all this with you, I thought, well, I would want to tell listeners, do not assume anything. I cannot. That's another huge tenet of how I think I've been successful over the years, because again, we have cultural understandings that are so deep, we don't realize that it's hard to imagine another way. But of course, the world is another way. And I was fortunate in that even before I went to Bali and started the business, I met an Englishman who was living in Hong Kong. And I naively asked the question, what's it like? You know, kind of a general question, you know, and he shared a story that stuck with me and remains all these years later, and it kind of guided me, and I think it helped me a lot. And that is, if you are in a boat, a small boat with your mother, your spouse, and your child, and the boat tips over, who do you save first? Who do you save?
Oh, boy. That's a hard question.
Okay. Tell me your answer, Katja.
The mother?
Ah, okay. Well, you're aligned with Asians. I, as an American, and most Americans, I would venture to say child. I'm pretty confident in saying that that's the orientation of my culture. You know, you got to save your kid at all costs. And it struck me that and this Englishman said, and for his culture, it was child. But he said, Asians will always say their mother.
Oh, and really?
Because you only have one mother. And also there's it's oversimplification, but, mm-hmm. And it struck with me that, wow, because I don't think it made an impression, that discussion that he and I had about how truly different things are in the world. And it's carried forward all these years when I'm in Bali, that things that are, you know, that things happen there that would not happen ever in my country. So mm-hmm. I can't assume anything. I remember once I got stuck because, and my whole, it was just, my whole business trip was messed up because there was a bank holiday that was supposed to be for 3 days, but the president, there was elections going on, and the president basically wanted to curry the favor of all of the millions of bank employees across the country, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, and others, because when there's a bank holiday, then there's other holidays. So he closed the banks for 7 days, seven business days.
Okay. That is special.
Yes. And that is something and it created backlogs of business, but also you couldn't get money out of the bank. And when you're dealing, and ATMs are limited in the amount of money that you can get out by daily mm-hmm. limits. And it's fine when you're just going about in life, but if you're buying wholesale business-wise, you need $1,000. You can't take out $1,000 a day. Anyway, and banks were closed. You couldn't get money out of the bank. You could not get money out. And then when they finally opened again, there was such backlogs of everything. It really created havoc in the economy. This would never happen in the United States.
Yeah. Very different. Very different. Yeah. And you can't plan that or plan ahead. I mean, how to do that.
Right. And so that's what I mean. You can't assume anything when you're working internationally, you know, it's just because things can be so different than you could ever, you know, imagine. So it makes it interesting and fun, but it also means emotionally, you just have to roll with it. You just have to accept, you know what? I'm not meant to have size 7 rings. Oh, well, even though that's the most popular thing, you just have to emotionally go, okay, well, I guess I can't buy this because I can't get the money.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy. Wow. That's really a challenge. I really love listening to your experiences because it shows how much this is also kind of like a personal development story, right? I mean,
absolutely. Analytical Andy could not analyze her way out of any of these things. Yeah. I had to completely, you know, it has been wonderful for me as an individual, as a person, to, you know, to become more flexible, to become more patient, mm-hmm. To become more respectful, and certainly more compassionate because of, I get a continual reminder every 6 months of what it's like to go to a third world country. And so, wow, how privileged am I when I worry about what's happening in my life here with, oh no, I have to fix my roof or this or that. I mean, it puts it all in perspective. So this has been the greatest blessing ever for me to spend so much time in Bali and in, you know, creating this business. And also it's also been good to teach me that, I am the same no matter what I do for a living. You know, mm-hmm. I'm the same person, and so much, at least in the States, so many people identify with work as who they are. Mm-hmm. And I changed completely. I was a bureaucrat, and then I was a solo entrepreneur who made very little money in the beginning. And, you know, I mean, income went down dramatically. And, you know, but I was the same. So that was important for me personally to learn that, you know? So now it's much more comfortable to have a different lifestyle, you know, with the gig economy and people patching together income from different sources and stuff. But when I started, this was not the case. So it was more unusual.
Yes.
And I had, you know, but yeah, so I would encourage people to trust their instincts, because you can't lose that way. Even if something doesn't work out, you can say, well, you can't mm-hmm. regret it, because at least something was guiding you to do this, you know?
Yeah.
But I also will say, you know, if you're going to do anything internationally work-wise, it's not easy. And people tend to think that somehow I go sit in a hammock and magically have a business. But a business is business, whatever field you're in.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. This was so inspiring. And I, you know, thanks for sharing your experiences and, your journey, I might even say.
Yes.
With all of that. Just very inspiring and very, I think it's an encouraging story.
Well, thank you. It's been fun. I haven't reflected like this in a long time about all, you know, about my journey, but you're right. It is, it is a journey. And I'm very blessed. I'm very lucky. And I really salute the name of, you know, this podcast and your whole philosophy of selling from the heart. I think that's also why I've been successful.
Oh, all right. Good. This is, love to hear that. All right. Well, you know, all the continuing journey, and I look forward to chat with you again.
Okay. Thank you, Katja. Bye.
Bye.